Borodar, good morning. I'm Auriel Miller. I'm the director of the IWA. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we are Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through our policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and much further afield too. We're funded by our members, the events that we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. Today's event is really kindly possible thanks to the support of the National Lottery Community Fund. And we're also grateful for the support of Mencap Cymru in organising it. So thank you to you both, Diolch yn fawr. It's the 15th in our ongoing series of Rethinking Wales events. We started this a year ago, obviously now, in March 2020, responding to the rapid changes that were forced on us all by COVID-19 by setting up conversations as a way to generate discussion and learning in a really difficult time for everybody. We aim to bring together people to highlight the ways in which the pandemic is creating lots of new challenges that we might not have thought of before, and also is exposing existing ones even further. To date, we've used these online sessions to address a range of topics, including social care, young people's well-being, the plight of cultural venues, and Wales's management of the pandemic. A little bit of housekeeping before we get stuck in. It's a Zoom webinar, so we can't see your faces, I'm afraid, but do please say hello in the chat. Please remember that all chats and questions are recorded. Our panel today isn't going to be answering live questions from the audience, but do please send your questions in and we will send them to the panel afterwards, and they'll write up their responses, which we'll feature in a blog post on the Welsh Agenda online. The hashtag for the series is #RethinkingWales. So do please share what you're hearing and what you're learning for lots of people who can't be with us today. And it will, of course, be recorded, and both an audio podcast and a video will be available. One of the things we're keen to do at the IWA is to make sure that we use our platforms to enable other people's voices to be heard, and particularly voices that may not get heard as clearly as they should be. So I'm really delighted to welcome our chair for today, Sian Davis, who's the head of strategic programmes at Mencap Cymru. Sian, over to you.
Thank you very much, Auriel, and bore da I bawb. We're really grateful for the IWA giving us this opportunity to explore how the pandemic has impacted the lives of people with a learning disability. COVID-19 has required all of us to relinquish contact and connection with our families, our friends, and wider community. And perhaps it's given all of us a taste of what it feels like to have limited control over our lives. But these aren't really unfamiliar feelings for many people with a learning disability, even before this pandemic. So we know that people with a learning disability are much more reliant on structured groups and activities for socializing. We also know that individuals often require support from others to access those friendships. So there's really far less room for spontaneity. On top of this, we have the disproportionate impact of COVID on disabled people across the UK, the implications of living in supported housing during a pandemic, and the initial failure of all UK nations to prioritise this group despite the increased risks. That's before we begin to consider the strain on families who are not only dealing with the lack of support currently, but also really worried around what adult social care is going to look like going forward. We also know that the loss of structure, predictability, and connection is already having an impact on people in terms of their independence and their confidence. There have, of course, been gains, and we know firsthand that people have really relished the opportunity to learn new skills and to connect through technology. But again, this option hasn't been available for everyone. But this event today is a chance for us to kind of consider community and connection beyond this pandemic. And it's an interesting one because community is an ongoing focus for learning disability and how we define it. It's really not unusual for social care staff to talk about supporting people with a learning disability to access their community. But if we think of our own lives, this language, I think, is quite rare. We would rarely speak in those terms. Instead, we would perhaps talk about meeting friends in town for a coffee or going to the park to meet with our kids' friends, or maybe going to the pub to meet with our partners. And this is because community can't make sense without understanding it's made up of relationships, and it's our connections that are key. So in this sense, colleagues at MenCap Cymru have spent the past few years collecting the oral histories funded by the Heritage Lottery of people with a learning disability to capture their direct experience of friendships and relationships. And what these stories have taught us is just how important friendships and relationships are to people. So they've spoken about the pride in having a shared history with somebody, the importance of companionship, that prospect of sharing a life with somebody, the role friends have in supporting people to understand who they are and making sense of the challenges we face in life. So for many people with a learning disability, friendships and relationships have provided a real sense of validation. And there's something really, really important about knowing that beyond our immediate family, there are people who value us, who choose to spend time with us. But we also know that community and connections aren't easy for people with a learning disability. Many people speak about not feeling accepted or safe in mainstream environments, and only finding this acceptance by accessing learning disability specific environments where they can be themselves and have the explore friendships. We know in Wales that we have a progressive legislative framework in the Social Services and Wellbeing Act, but what the stories have exposed is the difficulty in translating those principles into practice. So for those familiar with social care, you'll understand the tension that exists between securing safeguarding without compromising people's rights. And this is very clear when we consider the support around intimate relationships, which is also exacerbated by the continued perception within society that people with a learning disability have no permission for sexual identity or expression. Ultimately, then, friendships and relationships are too often viewed as an added extra. They're lovely, but they're certainly not core business of support, and they're certainly not the core role of support staff. But if we're serious about addressing health inequalities for people with a learning disability or people's well-being, it's unclear to me how we're able to do that without addressing the difficulties in terms of relationships and connections. We all of us want to support people with a learning disability to have a good life. But it's rare when we're starting to construct this good life that we put connections and relationships at the centre. One of the lasting quotes from one of the stories we received as part of our oral history project is from an individual who was in a relationship, and when asked how their support staff supported that, they explained that their support staff were fine with the relationship as long as it didn't interfere with the support, which for me actually sums it up in that we unintentionally marginalize the more complex aspects of people's lives. So we're far more comfortable in social care with focusing on those kind of tangible outputs for people. Yet what we know from the stories is unless we are proactive as professionals, as family members, then we're not able to secure friendships and relationships for people with a learning disability. And we have to pursue these with the clarity we would supporting people to access public transport or maybe supporting people to gain paid employment. So this is the kind of starting point. And this morning, we're going to have an opportunity to explore people's direct experiences during this pandemic and specifically around connections and relationships. But before we start that discussion, I'd like to ask Professor Stuart Todd to tell us a bit about his research that he's leading in Wales.
So thank you very much, Sian, for that very interesting and absorbing introduction. I'm Stuart Todd, and I'm a researcher at the University of South Wales. It probably is obvious to many people now, I am not Welsh. I'm Scottish, but I have lived and worked in Wales for quite a long time now. And the reasons I came to Wales, because at the time I came to Wales, Wales was seen as a leading country in terms of learning disability policy. It was a radical place to be, and I still believe that commitment is there now. So I'm still very proud to be working and living here. Thanks for the invitation to speak at this important event. I'm going to stick to my 5 minutes. I know I'm a researcher and I could probably speak for 2.5 hours if I wanted to, if people let me. So I'm going to stick to my time very much. I'm going to be telling you about some aspects of the work, the COVID-19 and learning disability work that is happening at the University of South Wales. And it's clearly important to understand the impact of the past 12 months on the lives of people with learning disability and family carers and for services. It's been tough for everyone. It's been a challenging 12 months, but for some groups, it has been even harder and even more severe. And amongst those groups are people with learning disabilities. They've been amongst the group who have been the most hardest hit. And we need to understand what has happened in the past 12 months, the how of what has happened, the why things that have happened, if we want to learn to make things different for the future. I'm involved in three different projects at the university, which only focuses on people with learning disabilities and COVID-19. And I'm only going to talk about one of those in particular. It's a major UK study involving many groups and organisations across the UK. And it's important because it has involved speaking directly to people with learning disabilities, even during a pandemic. We've been speaking to people with learning disabilities by Zoom or on telephones about their experiences of the past 12 months. And we're going to carry on that work for another 6 months. And it involves Wales. It has involved people with learning disability in Wales. And we've been really well supported by some key organisations in Wales, Learning Disability Wales, All Wales People First, and the All Wales Forum of Parents and Carers. And they have helped us and supported us to speak to 150 people in Wales, 150 people with learning disabilities. And some people here, I know, have taken part. And I'd like to say a big thank you to those organisations that has helped us. And it's an incredible achievement in this difficult time that we've managed to speak to so many people. So a huge thank you. We have, obviously, not everyone is able to take part in an interview either by Zoom or by telephone. And so we have also been running an online survey so other people, carers, parents, can take the survey on behalf of a person with learning disability. And so far, we have captured the experiences of 90 people with learning disabilities through our online survey. So overall, we have 250 people in Wales involved, 250 people with learning disabilities involved in Wales in this project. And that's incredible. And what we've been trying to do is to understand the experiences of individuals during the pandemic, its effect on health, its effect on support, its effect on their lives, its effect on relationships and the need for support. And we're not doing that just because it's a good idea. We're doing it because actually we want to find out what's happening to be able to make an effective difference to today and tomorrow. And so we're going to be sharing what we find with government agencies, with services, with groups of people with learning disability, with anyone who's interested in our study. And we're still doing the study, and we're going to be changing what we do over the next few months. And so the part of the engagement that we want to do is not just to tell people about what we're finding, but for people to come forward and tell us what it is they'd like to know, either because we have the answers in the survey or because we can change our survey to make changes to find out important questions. So, for example, the survey is now changing to be looking at aspects about vaccination, about people's experiences and struggles that people have had in terms of vaccination. And so we're going to be doing this study for another 6 months, and people can still join it. People can still engage with us. And the more people who do, the stronger the study. And it's more likely that the bigger the study and the more important the study, the more likely it is that people will listen and people will act. And so we are now at the process where we're looking at what we have found from all those conversations that we've had. And obviously in a few minutes, I can't do that with you. But we are going to be running an online event at the end of April, only in Wales, where we're going to be talking about the experiences of people in Wales, because it's part of a bigger study. But we want to focus in those events on what is happening in Wales and to speak to audiences in Wales. So if you want to know more about the work that we're doing, if you want to know about what we're finding, about how we can use our information, please do get in touch with the organizer of this event, who can share, we can pass on your details with us. And we do want to make a difference, and we do want people to engage with us. So please do take part. And thank you very much for that brief window to speak to you all today. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. It's such an important piece of research, and I really do hope people get involved and support this. Okay, so we're going to start now with our panel. And firstly, could I ask Michael, could you introduce yourself to everyone, please?
So I'm Michael, and I used to work for Menka.
That's fine. Maybe where you're from and your age.
So I'm from Cardiff, and I'm 25.
Thank you, Michael. Mm. Sophie, could you introduce yourself, please?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Sophie Hinksman, and I am 35 years of age. I've got medium auburn hair, green eyes, and I live in a village called Saundersfoot in Pembrokeshire, and I'm a South advocate locally and nationally, and I've got lots of different hats on. I work for the Ministerial Advice Group. I'm the co-chair and the External Affairs Officer for Pembrokeshire People First. I live in Pembrokeshire. I'm also an advocate and co-chair for All Wales People First. So, yeah.
And finally, Joe.
Hey, I'm Joe Powell. I'm the Chief Executive of All Wales People First. Sophie's my boss. I'm 44, can't believe it. I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome in 1996, aged 20 years old. And I've had a fight to leave the care system, get the job I have now. And I'm part of People First.
Brilliant. Thank you, Joe. Okay, we're going to start the panel discussion with Michael this morning. Michael, thank you so much for agreeing to take part in this. I'm just going to ask you a few questions just to get some insight into your experience of the pandemic. So to begin, could you let us know how your life has changed during the pandemic?
It's been different because people have seen people less, and before the beginning of the pandemic, I still used to work in the Mencap office, and I still used to go out and attend activities and things. It was different not having as much contact.
So Michael, before the pandemic you were working for Mencap, and then you were put on furlough, and then since then you've actually been made redundant, so you've been pursuing new work, haven't you, through supported employment? So could you explain a little bit about that process, how the loss of structure of work, what impact that has had on you?
It was different not having a commitment to go to work. When I started my work placement, it felt different again going back to doing something. I built some structure and starting a new routine with that.
And then thinking of your social life, because I know you had quite an active social life in many ways before the pandemic. How has that changed for you? So your access to people, for maybe the clubs and activities that you used to do before?
Yeah, so I've not done the other things that I used to do. So I used to do kayaking, swimming, and have guitar lessons. Well, I haven't had any guitar lessons since the pandemic. I've not been swimming since then either, but I did go to one of the club barbecues at one point during the summer. With the kayaking, which was what I did most, what I'd done for the longest. I haven't done that throughout most of the lockdown. Did it for a couple of weeks or so back in September, but not for very long.
Thanks, Michael. I was just wondering as well if there had been any positives that had come out of the pandemic for you.
I started going for more walks throughout the night.
Michael, sorry,
yeah.
Your audio has changed a little bit. I wonder. Oh, that's better.
Oh. So I started having some online video calls with some people who I knew from the community centre, who I met during the lockdown. And I joined some new groups there, and at one point I played tennis with them and went to the cinema with them when that was back open. So I've met some new people through joining new groups during the lockdown.
And were they new groups through your church connection or completely separate?
Yes.
Through the church. Okay, that's brilliant.
Yes, that's right.
I just wanted to ask as well, what the hardest thing has been for you during this pandemic?
The hardest thing for me has probably been not having as many work commitments, not having, yes.
Having any work commitments?
Yes.
And so is that the structure to your day, but also maybe access to people?
Yes, it's both of them things. And yes.
Thank you, Michael. And just thinking about, you know, hopefully in time we come out of this pandemic, what changes would you like to see for your life in terms of your friendships or your relationships and just your social life generally? What aspirations do you have?
I'd like to meet more people who I can stay in contact with. Because normally, like throughout my 20s, I've met new people, but not managed to keep in contact with many people.
So being able to have friends who stay in your life, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you think work has helped you with that?
Yes, I've kept in contact with a lot of people from work, and that has helped. because I didn't keep in contact with many people from school and college. So the work has helped in that aspect.
Thank you, Michael. And then finally, is there anything else that you would like to share with us that maybe you haven't had the chance to say about what this year has been like or has meant for you?
No, thank you.
That's great. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences and yeah, being honest with us. Sophie, I'd like to get some insight into the experience of the pandemic for you. So coming back to that kind of first question, how has your life changed during the pandemic? How is life different?
I can honestly say that it hasn't changed that much, truthfully. The pandemic has been tough. Some days have been definitely been harder than others, but I have found ways to stay in contact with family and friends and work colleagues. The main change has been to my mental health. It's gone on too long and it's exhausting to keep up the effort to be moved physically. I have anxiety and find it very difficult to cope with the information and changes, particularly around the vaccine. On a practical note, I've been furloughed from my job in a restaurant. Food shopping took a while to organise, but now I'm in a rhythm of weekly buying bits and pieces from my local shop and going with a friend monthly to a supermarket.
Thanks, Sophia. A couple of things I'd like to ask there. So what could have helped in terms of supporting your well-being and mental health? And also the second part, how has furlough impacted you?
For going back to your first point, I've been going on a health note, I've been going to my local GP in Dock Hospital because I've been getting a lot of pains and a lot of anxiety, and all they're saying is that I should have tablets and medication and stuff, and it's not helping. It's getting me more anxious because they're not finding out what's going on. And so I've referred myself back, well, 3 years ago I had a mental health breakdown, and I've referred myself back to the mental health team now because the GP isn't helping me in the way that I want them to. So I've referred myself back to the mental health team, and I've got an assessment next week to try and get that extra support. And how furlough's impacted me is, it hasn't really impacted that much, really. I've not really thought about work that much because I've been quite busy during the pandemic at home. It's been quite nice being at home. And when I do feel low, I do feel like I wish I was in work, because even though with the COVID-19, I have put on weight, and my physical weight is getting me down. So I wish I did go back to work and start running around and doing some jobs and stuff.
That's great. Thank you, Sophie, for being so honest. I think that's really helpful to understand. And I think lots of people will be able to empathise with some of the difficulties that you were talking about. Again, I think we've all tried during this past year to perhaps think of some positives. And I was wondering, has there been any positives for you out of this pandemic?
Yeah, Zoom has been a godsend for me. It's been able to do lots of activities, meet new people and attend meetings online. My local Pembroke People First group has got a weekly timetable full of activities. I run my own session on a Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock, which I do bingo for everybody in my local People First group. I attend activities with other People First groups across Wales on Zoom, a bonus of not going and having to travel. I'm joining a lot more UK-wide groups to like Gig Buddies in Wales, England and Scotland, the Stay Up Late campaign, the No Bedtimes campaign, and Electric Umbrella. I love Electric Umbrella. I have also joined the Insight app from Innovate Trust, which is based in South Wales, which has helped me meet up with lots of new people.
I think it's really interesting around Zoom and technology, because that's certainly the feedback that we've been getting from lots of people, that people feel really chuffed that they can use this and they can use it quite confidently. And your point, Sophie, about being able to actually access different things that perhaps we wouldn't have before because of the constraint of travel. So that's really good to hear that that's your experience too. I mean, I was going to ask now around what the hardest thing has been during the pandemic, but I wonder, given what you've said around the struggle with your mental health, maybe that's it. But is there anything else that you would like to explain around what you found difficult during this year?
Yeah, the hardest thing for me is not being able to travel around Wales. I miss spending time with my friends and family. I even miss working. Zoom is great, but it's not the same face-to-face, sitting next to the person, walking down the street together. I live alone independently, so when my anxiety hits, I struggle to know who to turn to, especially when I'm feeling low. Not being active has made me gain weight. So that's a struggle as well.
And that connection maybe between our physical health and our well-being, and how that perhaps is playing out, like I could see that. And I think because you had maybe such an active life before, and then that being pulled away. Just then that other question around, so when we come out of this period, what changes would you like to see in terms of access to friendships, relationships, social life? What would help you going forward?
I've been involved with local people first groups around my county, because I'm involved with the three counties, Ceredigion, Carmarthenshire and Ceredigion. And Ceredigion South Access groups are talking about having a massive party when this pandemic is all over. So I'd love to go, but travelling to Ceredigion from Pembrokeshire would be a bit hard for public transport. There's been so many good things and new people, but public transport is going to be a massive barrier to meeting after the pandemic. I think the online stuff will continue. I'm not ready to give up my Scottish friends. I've been checking out flights and trains to visit them. The way we support friends and relationships in care homes and residential homes need to change. We've been talking about this in the Dream Team in West Wales. I think managers need to be educated in how to communicate and work together with their residents. Some people can have friendships and even sexual relationships. How we can talk about consent needs to talk about more, because we are all adults, all humans, and deserve relationships. Finally, after all this is gone, we are planning a massive party locally too and nationally. We are planning cocktails in Cardiff.
That sounds brilliant. I'd like to come to that. Sophie, is there anything else that you'd like to share with us to help us understand what this year has meant for you?
Yeah, I'm just not talking about myself now, but talking about other people that I know. Living in supported living and residential services have been tough for people with learning disabilities during the pandemic, but it's not just the pandemic causing the problems. Generally, the problems have always been there. The pandemic has just made things worse. Following government guidelines in blanket responses have been removed voice choice and control for people with learning disabilities. People's rights have been taken away from them. We need to learn from this and make sure it doesn't happen again.
I think that's a really important point to end on, Sophie, and well, I'm sure Joe will pick up as well. But thank you so much for being so honest and sharing both your personal experience, but also in terms of your role within the self-advocacy movement, that kind of the changes that you feel are really important to improve the lives of people with a learning disability. Thank you very much, Sophie.
Thank you.
And finally, Joe. Hiya, Joe.
Hiya.
I'm in the first instance interested to understand for you personally what this pandemic has meant.
I think what it's really made me realise, and it was the same with austerity and when we had the benefit cuts and everything, is how lucky I am to have a job and to have employment, because I'm somebody who is a massive introvert, and outside social experience is causing me a lot of anxiety. So actually, it's easier for me to live on my own than your average person. Although it's not that it hasn't had its problems, because the fact that I can't go out and I can't mix and I can't come, that used to break the day up. And so I obviously needed some social connection. But what it did make me realize was how socially isolated I am as well in the community. If something was to happen to me from a safeguarding point of view, nobody would know. My parents don't live here anymore either. So although I don't miss people, I'm potentially dangerous. I'm potentially in danger because of that. And the strange thing is for me, I think the biggest thing I found harder than anything else during COVID, would you believe, is the fact the constant meetings on Zoom, not this one, of course, this is wonderful. I'm talking about actual meetings, you know, in terms of meetings that used to happen quarterly as part of my job, that happen weekly or fortnightly. You know, I find that really, really difficult because it means more and more social contact, and I just get worn down. And I think what this pandemic has highlighted to me is what society's priorities really are when there is a crisis, and it isn't the vulnerable.
That's an important point to end on. Joe, you have shared your story as part of our oral history project, and within that you've been really candid around the difficulties you find in terms of social situations and friendships more generally. But I was wondering whether the absence of people, as you've talked, has made you perhaps reevaluate that or to reflect on what that means for you.
I think absolutely. I think when I was first filmed on the project, I said, I don't think I need people. And I can't remember if this bit of footage was used in the final thing, but I remember saying that if there was a nuclear war and I was the only person left on the planet, I'd be fine. And I really believed that. And what I've learned is that, yes, I'm more able than your average bear to live in isolation, but I do need people, even if it's for different reasons. I think, you know, Sean, obviously when I come to meetings to do with the LGBT meetings that we have, the fact that I'm physically going somewhere and I'm physically outside, I'm on the train and there are people around, it connects you to things. You are speaking to people. And then when you come back, you're... home life, you know, when you've been out all day and you've had a meeting, it's lovely to come back and watch the television. It's more special, it's more in. But when you're in the house constantly, there's no divide, there's nothing. So yes, it's made me realize that I do need people. And it's made me wonder as well whether it's not the case that I don't need people. Maybe because of my autism in the past being nonverbal and not communicating, I just got in the habit of not being with people and don't know how to get it back again. So that's something I'm looking at very strongly.
Thank you, Joe, for your honesty. The second question I wanted to ask you, within MenCap, we find it quite helpful to consider connection in different layers. So the first layer being around our really intimate relationships, the second layer being around maybe our families and close friendships, and then that third layer being almost our contribution to our communities. And I was just really interested to understand your thoughts in terms of the impact of this pandemic on those different layers for people with a learning disability, in terms of your role as the director of All Wales People First.
Yeah, well, what's really interesting about this pandemic is it's had positives and negatives, to be fair. I think with the negatives, first and foremost, it's affected people with learning disabilities disproportionately. What is really interesting is we've been working with other pan-disability groups on writing a report about what the inequalities are. And actually, what's really fascinating is it's the same inequalities for all people with disabilities, except for people with learning disabilities, it is worse. It's more disproportionate. And as Sophie said before, COVID hasn't caused these inequalities. COVID's exacerbated the ones that were already there. And I think this is my big scare, my big fear, is that this gets whitewashed as a political kind of situation, as in, this was unseen, this was unforeseen. We didn't know this was coming, it was a one-off. Because these issues were there. COVID just shows you what happens when we don't get things right and we don't put things into place. It shows you what happens when the worst case scenario happens. Despite legislation, I think what really scares me, we have the Social Services and Wellbeing Wales Act and everything, which is wonderful in principle, but it is largely aspirational. There's a disconnect between regional partnership boards and actually the government And there needs to be a closer working, I think. And what's really interesting is, though, just to be fair to the Social Service and Wellbeing Wales Act, we did start to think more in terms of social model, in terms of community. But as soon as COVID struck, we just immediately went back to this medical model of thinking we protect people from COVID, but we do not prioritize things like relationships and friendships. And also the fact that that decision is taken away from people with learning disabilities in the first place. They got no say in it. Whatever happened to them in terms of losing their day centers in some cases, or being isolated and not being able to go out, they weren't consulted. And in many occasions, people were, there were rules put in place that were far more stringent than that were legal, just to safeguard, I think, quite often people who provide some of the services. So people weren't taking into account human rights in all of this. They were worried about getting into trouble about not protecting people from COVID, but forgetting about how they were denying people their human rights to have things like community access to relationships and to access, exercise as well.
I think that's a really interesting one. And coming back to your point, Joe, around these issues pre-existing, because I've certainly always felt that tension between safeguarding, if we think about COVID as a kind of safeguarding, and actually securing rights for people. And the question that we need to be asking is, who are we safeguarding in all of this? Is it ourselves as a sector, or is it people with a learning disability? I'm conscious of time, so I just quite an important one, I think, that I'd be really interested in understanding your perspective on is thinking of social care beyond this pandemic. What needs to change to make sure that people have a good life, essentially?
I think essentially the same that was needed before COVID, going back to this idea that it's exacerbated. It needs community cohesion. It needs, we need to be thinking more in terms of, we need a system in which the need drives the model and not the model drives the need, that we connect people's human needs. The first question we ask, and I was part of a consultation recently, I was writing it about frameworks to services and how we provide them for people. And they were saying, is that framework the first step? And it never is. The first step is to ask everybody what is important to you for a good life. It's always the first question you ask. Then you work it from there. And I think that's just the important thing. What's important to a person? And we need to be thinking about things like asset-based community interventions. I'm going to promote self-advocacy because I believe in it. I work for it. Without self-advocacy, people can't come around the table and speak for themselves, have the skills. And those who need to work in a co-productive manner, people who maybe can't make completely decisions on their own, can't come there as equal citizens unless they do that. So in essence, we need the Social Service and Wellbeing Wales promised, and we need local authorities and Welsh Government to work together to make it happen. And that's essentially what needs to happen.
Thank you, Joe. That's a really important point to end on. I think I'll hand back over to Auriel now just to round up. But if I could just thank all of you for just being so honest and sharing your experiences, we really value them. Thank you.
Absolutely. That was fantastic. So, Sian, thank you very much indeed for sharing the conversation with us, and to all of you, to Michael, Sophie and Joe, for what you've talked about, how your own lives have changed over the last year. I just want to pick out some of the themes that, listening to that, have struck me and some of the others on the IWA team too. And some of them, I'm kind of reflecting that they still need to be said. They still need to be said. It still needs to be said. So it's sort of hitting me between the eyes, as that it's surprising that it needs to be said, that friendships and relationships just aren't an added extra. They are essential for every single one of us. We need that human connection for our souls and our spirits to thrive in the ways that make us happy. So how we support people with a learning disability to create friendships and sustain those friendships that are long-term is so crucial, because we all know that those deep connections should not just be created by the social care system which supports them. So that's the one point that I'm taking away, the, I guess, my own shock and horror that we even need to be saying this again, but we do, and we should do, and we should keep on saying it. I think all of us over this last year, we've heard it really clearly from Michael, Sophie and Joe today. We've all realised things over this last year that we didn't know about ourselves, or that we didn't admit to knowing about ourselves before the whole COVID thing happened. How much we like or don't like being on our own, or how much we need other people, and where and when, whether at home or at work, and what happens when one of those things changes. How much Zoom and other kinds of technology has opened up new possibilities that weren't there before to connect with people much further away. And I thought, Sophie, you spoke beautifully about that, so thank you. But we also know that Zooms can be exhausting. Oh, yes. So Joe, I thought you illustrated that really, really well too. You know, and these changes are going to carry on, and there's a new awareness about, you know, for us all, about how we're living our lives at the moment, new challenges all the time, and adjusting to what work or home is like in this new reality. And we're going to have to change again as lockdown ends and we start getting into a different way of living again. We've changed our habits, and it can be really scary going back to doing things that we used to do, as well as exciting about carrying on doing new things too. And I thought, Michael, your examples about how that's scary, about how the habits have changed, was really helpful for people. We've talked also, we've heard about helping people with a learning disability being active members of the community where they live, and the role of the community in that, in enabling their well-being, and how important that people with a learning disability should be able to have a say over what they want to do, what their care package looks like, what job and hobbies they want to do, as well as those friendships and relationships that we know to be important. But we've also heard really, really powerfully that inequalities were there already for people with learning disabilities, and just thrown into even starker relief by COVID. And I'd like to invite you all to just be aware of the study on health inequalities in particular that the Health Foundation are doing at the moment. And Sian, we could perhaps pick up on this afterwards. And I'm really keen that we help the experiences of people from Wales be really clearly illustrated in that study. I think we also heard that things still aren't set up quite right in terms of structures and ways of doing things. There was a very powerful piece from Joe about how we went back to the medical model and away from the social model when COVID hit, and that decision was taken away from people with learning disabilities. So a really crucial question about who we're safeguarding. Are we safeguarding people, or are we safeguarding the professionals who provide that support, and how people with learning disabilities have had their human rights curtailed, which is not acceptable. So in terms of going forward and what happens next, just a reminder to us all that the first question to ask is, what's important to you for a good life? Taking it from there, that has to be the first step. That always has to be the first step. And if we're moving too far away from that, then something's going wrong. Thank you to everybody who's been sharing ideas and suggestions in the chat. I can see there's been all sorts of questions coming through. We'll make sure that the questions around that haven't been answered already are answered afterwards. And we'll also share a link with the follow-up email to this conversation to everybody registered with the Health Foundation inquiry as well, which I think is reporting in the summer. I'd really like to thank our panelists for giving us their time today. It's very, very kind of you, and we're very grateful. Thank you to Sian Davis from Mencap Cymru, to Michael Alcock, to Sophie Hinksman, and to Joe Powell too. Thank you also to our funding partner, the National Lottery Community Fund, for making this event possible. For those of you who aren't IWA members, if you want to get advance notice of all of our events, do please join us as a member, and the link is in the chat. We are finishing on time because I know that you're busy people and you've got things to do. So I'm sorry about the tech problems at the beginning of the call, but we're really grateful that so many of you could join us for what's been a really important discussion. Jochen Bauer.